Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I have to say, all of you are in for an incredible ride today. We'll be listening to the conclusion of a classic interview between my dad and two young women who were imprisoned by the Taliban for spreading the love of Christ. Yesterday, we learned that Heather Mercer and Dana Curry are no ordinary women. They fearlessly followed God's call to the Middle East and began illegally spreading the gospel in Afghanistan. One afternoon, they traveled to the home of some women who were interested in learning more about God. But instead of being warmly welcomed, Heather and Dana were met by members of the Taliban. They were arrested for sharing the good news of our Savior to the people who desperately needed to hear about Him. Let's listen in as my dad asks Heather and Dana to explain exactly what the Taliban legally accused them of. And as you'll hear, it was difficult to pinpoint an official reason these young women were imprisoned.
Let's get right to it if we can. We ran out of time last time, and at that point, Dana, you had mentioned there at the end of the broadcast that you were arrested. For what?
For showing this Jesus film at this family. And also, I'd given a copy of a children's storybook about some of the stories of Jesus, because one of the children had asked me for it, because we sometimes would read those stories at the family. And so the child had asked me for the book, and so I gave that also. So the Taliban found that book at the home, and then they confiscated our computer and found the Jesus film.
Mm. But there were no formal charges made against you. You didn't have any legal process. You were not represented by an attorney, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
No, we were actually taken and put on the Supreme Court. They didn't even tell us we were going to court until they take us one day and we end up in court. And they're like, well, do you have a lawyer yet? And so, and they hadn't even told us.
So the Supreme Court case actually started on September 8th. Just a few days before September 11th. And we had gone through about 3 weeks of interrogations. No charges were formally brought against us until the end of October, around October 20th. And so for about...
Wait a minute. How can you be before the Supreme Court if there are no charges made against you?
Well, in the history of Afghanistan, no foreigners have ever been tried on the Supreme Court of Afghanistan. It was, I think, part of the desire of the Taliban to make an example of foreign Christians and to say, we've had enough, this will not be allowed in our country. And so the case, in fact, I don't think was legitimate in the sense that they really wanted to consider the evidence and then give a punishment that fit the crime. It was more to make a display before the eyes of the world. And so we went to the Supreme Court once the war started after September 11th. They kept pushing back the issue of declaring charges against us. They said, we have to deal with the war. We can't take care of this case. But it was actually just a means to postpone and prolong the whole situation.
Dana, were you despairing at that time? I mean, you were in a mess from a human point of view. You were in an absolute mess. Here you are in prison, you know, at the mercy of people who have no mercy, who have already been linked to, and you may not have known this yet, but linked to this terrible bombing of your home country and bombs falling all around. And you didn't know what they were going to do with you, whether they were going to execute you or not. What were you thinking? What was going on in your mind?
Well, I think it really helped that I wasn't alone, and it wasn't even just Heather and I, but we had other strong Christian women in the prison with us. There was four others. Every once in a while, we could all get together, and they would help just sort out the situation, and we'd pray together. And also, because we were praying every single morning and every evening, I mean, and we sensed God's presence there. I mean, He would give us peace.
Did you ever get the feeling that you were back in the book of Acts?
Definitely. I mean, we would read the New Testament and we're like, this is just, it's coming alive. And it was, we needed those things just, you know, all through what Paul was talking about. And
as a matter of fact, there was a story that I've heard about one of the prisoners who experienced something similar to what Paul experienced.
Right. Well, it was amazing to read the book of Acts because you really did feel like you were back in the New Testament times and that it wasn't surprising to be persecuted for the sake of the gospel, because that's what was happening then. And so reading it, it came alive. And there was this one man, we called him Gideon, and Gideon was among some of the Afghans that was thrown in prison. And Gideon was beaten night and day for the duration of his time there. And the Taliban would beat the Afghans with a steel cable that was electrically powered, and they would beat them just up and down their bodies. And they would come in the morning, take them out, beat them, throw them back in their prison cell, come back at night and beat them again. This had just happened to Gideon. He was thrown into his cell after a severe beating, and he fell unconscious on the floor. Well, it was amazing because God met with him in his unconsciousness. And Gideon has told the story since we've all come out of prison. He said, I was lying there on the floor and I had this dream. And he said, in my dream, this man with long wavy hair walked into my cell. And he said, this man was glowing. He said his face was just so kind. And he kept saying how this man's face was so kind and he was just so beautiful. And he said the man told him to get up and to follow him. So Gideon in his dream gets up and he follows this man, and the man leads them out of the door of his prison cell. And he's out into the compound area of the prison. Well, the man again says, follow me. And so Gideon follows this man through the door of the compound that leads out into the open street, into freedom. Well, so Gideon has this dream, and finally he comes to from his unconsciousness. And he looks around his prison cell, and the door of his prison is open. And so he walks through. He thinks, well, it's open, I might as well walk through it. So he walks through the door of his prison, and he gets out into the courtyard. There are no Taliban guards anywhere. And he sees that the door from the courtyard to the outside is open. And so he walks through it, and he walks all the way home, and he's never caught again by the Taliban.
Oh, my.
And so there's just so many stories like that of God engaging people in miraculous ways.
Mm-hmm. When you really have to depend on him, you find out he's there, right, don't you? Well, you began to get the idea that America was now at war with the Taliban.
Right.
How did that news come to you?
Well, after September 11th, we knew that war was impending. Shortly after September 11th, on September 17th, we were moved to another prison, a high-security intelligence prison, where we were kept basically on our own, the six foreign women. And so, I mean, every day we didn't know if that would be the day the war would start. And then obviously it finally started with the bombing in Kabul on October 7th.
Mm. Now, you were in prison for how long then before they came and got you and moved you?
Well, I mean, after the bombing started, we spent another 8 weeks in this high security intelligence prison. And during that time, after the Taliban kind of got wind that the U.S. government might be attempting a rescue operation, they started moving us in the evenings to another prison. And that was kind of a sporadic thing with the hopes that the government wouldn't know exactly where we were. That was when the trial was unfolding at a greater level. That's when we were being presented with the charges officially. We were dealing with our lawyer. He was coming in and out of the country trying to work out our release. And it was during that time that we realized, apart from a miracle of God, the avenues that we've tried are not going to work. And then it was later on November 12th, when the Northern Alliance took over Kabul, that we were taken out by the Taliban and headed towards Kandahar.
While you were in prison, you were, again, attempting to minister to women who were also in prison. It became an occasion for you to share your faith, didn't it?
At times it wasn't so direct because we were being watched very closely. And for us, it wouldn't have been so dangerous. But for the Afghan women who were associated with us in that way, it could have meant death for them. So we were very careful.
You had to be really careful.
I struggled a whole lot with fear, particularly in the bombing and with the Supreme Court case and all of that. And I needed to find God in the midst of that in a way I'd never had to find him before. And at times, it was really, really difficult.
Music played a key role during that time for you, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to put you on the spot. I know Katie didn't ask you this, but would you sing for us now? Would you sing one of the songs that you sang? Select a song that was really meaningful to you at that particular time.
Sometimes we sing songs as prayers over the women or over the compound where we were, just to ask for God's presence to come and touch the women as we'd sing. And so this one was one that we kind of sang as a prayer over the women.
Please do sing it for us.
There is a light that shines in the darkness. There is a light that shines in the darkness. His name is Jesus. His name is Jesus. His name is Jesus. He's the light of the world. Yes, there is a light that shines in the darkness. There is a light that shines in the darkness. Your name is Jesus. Your name is Jesus. Your name is Jesus. You're the light of the world.
Oh, my. Did you feel His Spirit in that prison cell? Yeah. Did you feel like Paul and Silas sitting there singing in the night?
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. The times where I thought, you know, I couldn't go another day, which there were days like that. It was amazing that Jesus is faithful to fulfill all of His promises, to be near and to not be far. He understands the things that we feel, and He comes and ministers to those things.
And I think too, especially when things looked bad, just remembering to the cross of Jesus, just looking at the cross. And I remember different times we'd be bowed down in our little cell and just singing, "Holy, holy, holy, and worthy is the Lamb that was slain." And it was just such an incredible time of just even there, just getting on our faces before God and just remembering what He did for us, and that His grace was sufficient because of what He suffered, that He was going to help us through this, and it was worth it all for Him.
Are you all aware that when you say the word Jesus, the name Jesus, you say it in a different way than many other people do? You say it in a way that shows deep, deep love and appreciation and compassion and respect. Are you aware of that? Well, it shows through not just in the way you say Jesus' name, but in what you've done with your lives. Mm. Well, let's pick up the story at this point now and talk about when the Northern Alliance came.
Right.
And then you were taken by the Taliban somewhere.
Right.
You didn't know where you were going, did you?
There had been rumors that we might be moved and possibly moved to Kandahar, which we knew would be a dangerous situation because that was where the Taliban were headquartered. Mm. And as we were going out, all of the Taliban tanks were fleeing, the pickup trucks filled with Taliban soldiers. We were stopped periodically along the way at various checkpoints. And it really was the most desperate situation we'd been in up until that point. The U.S. government didn't know where we were. Bombing was happening out on the roads, all that kind of thing. But it was awesome because when we got in that van, the presence of God was really so tangible. I think for me, that was the time I felt it the most. And they tell us that if we give them ransom money, then they'll let us go. We found out later it was close to $6 million that they were looking for, this particular group of Taliban. And they said, well, we're going to find you a nice place to stay, but tonight you're going to sleep here. Well, we looked around, there were no buildings. And we said, well, where are you taking us? Where are we sleeping? And they pointed to a steel shipping container. And they put us in this steel shipping container where we spent the night. The next morning, the same group of Taliban men came, put us back in the van, drove us further south, and we stopped in a city called Ghazni, about halfway between Kabul and Kandahar. And it was there we were put in the fourth and final prison. And as soon as we pulled into the city, the U.S. started bombing Ghazni. And at this point, to be perfectly honest, I was kind of under this desk, again, because of the bombing and the potential of breaking glass. And after this time of silence, we heard these group of angry men again come and start banging down the door of this prison. And I remember thinking to myself, the Taliban are really angry now and they're coming back. And I had expected that we were going to be killed right there in that room.
Dana, so, did you also think you were perhaps going to be killed?
Well, I thought it was just a kind of like a feeling of shock that this loud banging was going on downstairs. And we knew the Taliban were coming back to get us. But I think I wasn't even thinking. Does that make sense? We're just kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. So it was very an intense moment.
Yeah.
And so just waiting there to see what would happen next, I just pretty much swallowed hard and was like, okay, Lord, give me grace to die if that's what's going to happen right now. But it, much to all of our surprise, in came running this Rambo-looking man. I mean, his hair was sticking up all over. The man was covered with dust. He had reams of ammunition around his neck. He had a rocket launcher in one hand. He had a machine gun in the other. And this man, I mean, he was scarier than any of the other Taliban we had just seen. But he starts yelling, "You're free, you're free. All of the Taliban have fled, and you're free." And within minutes, the whole prison just erupts in total mayhem. I mean, dozens of men, young men to old men, warriors for the Northern Alliance, came running in with all their weapons, and no one's in charge, and everybody's screaming, and they're saying, come with us, go this way, go that way. And so finally, they're telling us we can go free, and we need to go out into the city, and they're going to take us somewhere safe. Well, there starts to be more shooting, so they send us back in the prison and have us wait there for a while. And eventually, we get to walk out into the city streets after everything's calmed down. And it was like a parade. It was like a movie, walking through the middle of a movie. As we walk through the city, we both looked at each other and we thought, this is history. This is Afghanistan changing forever. And the thing that's so significant for me was that day was November 13th, 2001. If you remember at the beginning, I said the day I gave my heart to Jesus was November 13th, 1992.
And it's just amazing that God totally rescued us out of that situation. You know, he came in a way we could have never imagined. And then from there, we were able to get in contact with the Red Cross, and they helped us talk with the military. And so there was this plan that the U.S. forces were going to come get us in the middle of the night. Well, the original plan totally fell apart, and it didn't look like it was going to happen. And then right at the last minute, like at midnight, one of the local commanders let us go out to a field to be found by the helicopters. And so we're out on this field, and all we have is a small little lantern to light up where we were. And we see the helicopters come close, but then they go back out again. And so several times they'd come near, and they go back out. And then the phone we had went dead. And so we couldn't communicate that they were near, and they just didn't see us.
Right. The special forces finally came, and they landed, and they found us in this darkness, and they walked us to the helicopter. Seeing that helicopter was really a moment I won't ever forget. It happened almost in slow motion. There was this huge, massive machine, everything that seems powerful and new and able to conquer and have victory, parked next to this little mud house. And I just couldn't believe this contrast, you know. And as we walked to the helicopter, the man gave us instructions what to do, and we got in. And finally, when we lifted off, I mean, there was just it was relief. Like, we really are going to make it. We're really going to come out of here alive.
What a powerful demonstration of the answers to prayer. Prayer got you all through this.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, my goodness. Then you went on to Islamabad, Pakistan, and you met your parents there.
It was my mom and then Heather's father.
I see.
That was amazing.
But you've come home and you've been speaking and you've been doing television, radio appearances since then, and you're doing a CD and all kinds of things are going on, but you haven't forgotten what your mission is.
Mm-hmm.
And your mission is no different than it was before. It's to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. You want to go back to Afghanistan, don't you?
Yes, we do. I think we've realized more than ever as we've come back and we've seen the tremendous outpouring of support, literally from millions of people from all over the world who've said, we prayed for you. We're so glad that you got out. We realize that this whole story, it doesn't have anything to do with the two of us. I mean, this is a God story and his desire to reveal his love and his glory to people all over the world.
Yeah, it must excite you to know that he chose you as the instrument to reveal his power, though.
Well, I think the two of us see ourselves as just two that are a part of the millions. Because everybody who prayed and everybody who's involved was a huge part in this testimony.
Your home church in Waco, Texas, was praying diligently for you all. I read an article in, I think, the Dallas Morning News about it. It's the first time I had heard the details of this. But, boy, they were fasting and praying for you,
right,
weren't they?
I mean, 24 hours a day, they were in the prayer room lifting us up. And so it's incredible, their support through this whole thing. So, but not only them, but even some other churches in our town, they held all-night prayers for us, all-night prayer times. And just I've heard so many stories of people having these all-night prayers. But what's incredible is they weren't just praying for us. The prayer time would end up praying for Afghanistan. Yeah. And we begin to see the sovereign picture of God wanted to free this nation, you know, and he needed the prayers to do it. So.
Well, the bottom line is this, God answers
prayer.
There's no question about that.
Awesome.
Would you all be willing to sing one more song for us?
Okay. Well, this one was just probably our anthem song through the whole time in prison, just a song of surrendering to Jesus and trying to trust in him. So you can just sing that one. We sang it a lot. So,
Jesus, lover of my soul, all-consuming fire is in your gaze. Jesus, I want you to know I will follow you all my days. For no one else in history is like you, and history itself belongs to you. Alpha and Omega, you have loved me, and I will share eternity with you. It's all about you, Jesus, and all this is for you. For your glory and your fame, it's not about me. As if you should do things my way, you alone are God, and I surrender to your ways. You alone are God, and I surrender to your ways.
On behalf of millions of Christians around the world, I say thank you for loving our Lord. And thanks for being our guests.
Thanks. It was wonderful to be with you.
Mm. Incredible honor to be here with you today. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. When I hear Heather and Dana sing, I close my eyes and try to imagine their voices ringing through the halls of a prison and then being drowned out by exploding bombs. It is a difficult thing to wrap my head around. Their survival is truly a testament to the goodness of God. And if you'd like to read all of the details of their time in captivity, you're going to want to get a copy of their book, Prisoners of Hope, The Story of Our Captivity and Freedom in Afghanistan. And all the information on that can be found on our website, drjamesdobson.org. You know, my favorite part of this story actually comes after the end of the book and even after the end of this interview. Both Heather and Dana have overcome this traumatizing ordeal and continue to spread the gospel. Dana lives with her husband, where they work each and every day to bring the love of Christ to the people around them. Heather continues to minister in the Middle East despite what happened to her back in 2001. She has since gotten married, and her husband actually grew up in a Muslim culture and found the love of Christ. In 2008, Heather founded Global Hope, a ministry which serves families and local leaders in Muslim countries. And for more information on that, check the link to Global Hope on our website. You know, I love telling stories like this because they speak to so many of us. Even if we are not literally in prison for our faith, we all live in a world that's hostile to Jesus Christ. Family Talk exists to bring hope and encouragement to the culture that seems to be running farther and farther from God. And if you'd like to be a part of our mission, consider partnering financially with Family Talk. You can give on our website, drjamesdobson.org, via the Family Talk app or on our Facebook page. And also, if you want to call us, you can do so at 877-732-6825. One more time, 877-732-6825. We appreciate you spending the last 30 minutes with us. Tune in next time to hear from former atheist Lee Strobel as he shows how creation reveals its creator. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.